Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us for the Friday show with Lane County Senior Public Health Officer, Dr. Patrick Ludke. I'm Rachel McDonald. Dr. Ludke, thanks for being here.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Oregon hit yet another grim milestone today with the Oregon Health Authority's report that we've surpassed 100,000 cases of COVID-19 statewide, and the death toll across the state is 1,304. Here in Lane County, we have more than 6,000 cases and 80 people have died. These numbers are staggering, and I know I say this every week. I'm sure it takes a toll when you think about all those people who've been affected by this virus. What can you tell us about these recent cases that we're hearing about?
Well, you went exactly where I was planning to go. I don't usually come to this studio with numbers, but the last few days I've been looking at our experience over the last few months, and I'll just share some numbers too. It took us 6.5 months to get our first 1,000 cases. That happened on September 21st. We hit 2,000 cases on October 16th, so that was just 25 days later, and 3,000 cases on November 11th, about 25 days as well. But then 4,000 cases, 5,000 cases, and 6,000 cases happened much more quickly. We hit 4,000 in 13 days, 5,000 in 13 days, and we hit 6,000 cases today, which was only 11 days after we hit 5,000. So yes, we're again on the steep part of that curve, going up, and there's a lot of cases out there. It's in all age groups, and it's also in multiple geographic areas. So the risk is very high.
So when you say multiple geographic areas, not just Eugene, Springfield, which I believe is where the majority of the cases have been?
Yeah, it is. You know, when you look at a population-weighted sort of set of data, it's often going to be skewed towards where the large population centers are. So more of the cases are in the Eugene, Springfield metropolitan area. But we still have, on a per 100,000 level, we still have significant cases occurring in other areas. So the Florence area, the Cottage Grove, Creswell area, we are still seeing cases in high numbers.
So Oregon received its first shipment of the Pfizer vaccine this week, and already some hospitals have administered it. What are some of the considerations as the vaccine is being given now to healthcare workers?
Well, these first doses come from the Pfizer company, and that's the Pfizer vaccine that requires cold storage. So it's taken a little while to make sure that the logistics is in place and we don't waste any doses. When you need a minus 80 freezer, those don't grow on trees. You have to make sure that you have good logistical plans. And that is a good thing that has been assured. And we're going to see vaccination occur. I think it was mentioned on Monday at Peace Health, and I think it's probably the same at McKenzie. Mm-hmm. And that is amazing, really, I have to say. When you get old enough to remember new vaccines coming on the market and how long it took from bench to bedside, as they say in the research world, you sometimes are looking at 10, 15, 20 years before you get a vaccine out. This vaccine has come out in the same calendar year that we first discovered the virus in this country, so that's amazing.
And what side effects have you heard about so far?
You know, so for this vaccine, it was actually published this week. Mm-hmm. So, and anyone who's listening today can go get this article. The New England Journal of Medicine published this week the side effect profile of this Pfizer vaccine. And we are seeing side effects that are pretty much akin to what you see with other vaccines. And we break most side effects out into two areas. There's the local side effects. And of course, anytime you put a needle in somebody's skin, you have pain, you can have redness, you can have swelling, it hurts. It's like getting a sliver. And then you have these more systemic side effects. Your whole body might respond. And those are things such as fever, fatigue, headaches, chills, joint pain. So the side effects are broken out in a colorful chart. I suggest anyone who's interested just Google New England Journal of Medicine and look up COVID vaccine side effects, and there's the article for you. And why I mention this is because this is, first of all, it's the oldest medical journal on the planet, which is kind of interesting that the United States has the oldest medical journal. We're far from the oldest country. But it's also probably the most prestigious medical journal on the planet as well. And this is a peer-reviewed article reviewed by a variety of persons not involved in the vaccine. So you can take a look. And if you've never looked at these side effect profiles before, you're going to say, wow, 59% of people in the age 16 to 55 age group had fatigue after the vaccine. And you're going to say, oh my gosh, that's, you know, a little more than one in two. But many vaccines do that. Measles and mumps and diphtheria, et cetera. Many vaccines have 10, 20, 30, 40, 50% of people having side effects similar to this. For my eyes, and having looked at this sort of data for 40 years, there are no surprises here and nothing scary.
Now, we are expecting more shipments of the Pfizer vaccine in the coming weeks, but yesterday we heard that we're getting less in next week's shipment than expected. Does this cause you concern?
Well, I don't say I'm concerned. I think that there is a supply and demand issue here. And, of course, there is much more demand than there is supply. And people either well above my pay grade or far in a different jurisdiction, you know, different area, are making these decisions. So I would like more vaccine than we are getting. But again, I am just absolutely amazed we're getting vaccine in the same calendar month that we found the virus.
Well, let's go ahead to some listener questions. Here's one about when older folks might be able to get the vaccine.
Hi, this is Susan from Eugene. I'm in my 70s. How will I know when I'm allowed to go and get my vaccination? And can I choose one or the other? Moderna would be my preference. Thank you.
So I think it's a good question, and part of it depends upon where she resides. So persons who are in a long-term care facility, a congregate setting of some type, are prioritized in the first group. They're the first of the first. We're calling them the 1A group. And if she's in a facility like that, she should get it in the next few weeks. I just got off a call with one of the pharmacies that has contracted with the federal government to vaccinate persons in long-term care facilities. And that pharmacy is going to be sending out pharmacists to do just that, to vaccinate in those facilities. So she might be vaccinated within a week or two if she happens to be in one of those facilities. If she's living at home, in her own home, she will be further down the list of priorities. And it will probably be in the next 4 to 6 weeks, would be my guess, when the first of those people are being vaccinated.
So we got an email from Richard who wants to know how soon the vaccine will be effective. He says, I'm 71 years old. I have high blood pressure, asthma, sleep apnea, and a history of pneumonia. After I get vaccinated, how long before I can feel safe being with family, grandkids, and friends? And then he asks, what does safe mean?
Oh, boy, the existential question. So the first question, it will vary a little bit by vaccine. So for the Pfizer vaccine, we know that 7 days after the second dose, people have developed not just antibodies, but what we call neutralizing antibodies, those antibodies that actually incapacitate the virus. So for Pfizer, the doses are 3 weeks apart. So you get the first dose, let's just make it easy, January 1st. You get the second dose 3 weeks later, so that's 21 days later, January 22nd. And then 7 days after that, you're protected. So that's January 29th. So it's about a month for the Pfizer vaccine before you are protected. And I do want to give that caveat. No vaccine is 100% effective. This vaccine is shown to be 95% effective. So there's still a small chance that he or his loved one who got the vaccine may not be protected after the two doses. Now, the second question, what does protected mean, is a really good question, actually. Because we're in a pandemic and because we were trying to get a vaccine out in a quick but safe manner, we it didn't include me, it's these pharmaceutical companies and the federal government, looked at what are the criteria to say the vaccine is effective. And we wanted to prevent disease. So effective in this case means you're preventing COVID disease. Does that mean that it also will be effective preventing COVID infection? It appears as though it will be effective in many at preventing infection, but we do not know, will it prevent infection in everyone? So you could get vaccinated and still get infected, but it's so mild that you don't even know it. And that second question, what does it mean to be protected, is a broad-based answer because you could get the vaccine, you could get infected, you could pass it on to somebody else and never even know it. And we just don't have the data to say for sure what the answer to his second question is.
So, yeah, we did have a question regarding, you know, if you could get the vaccine and it would prevent the symptoms of COVID-19 but still spread the disease.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's kind of what I was trying to say. I think that you said it better than I did. And, you know, in many ways, it's akin to the influenza vaccine. You know, the flu vaccine is far from perfect. I think everybody wishes it was better. Wouldn't it be great if it was a single dose and you were immune for life? But that's not the way it is. The influenza virus, it just mutates so rapidly. But it does absolutely prevent severe disease. And we have great data that shows 50, 60% reductions in hospitalization. You still might get infected. You still might even get a little bit sick, but you will not get severe disease. You will not end up in the hospital. You will not have, you know, your life altered for some period of time and get a big hospital bill. So it appears to be that the new COVID vaccines are markedly better in terms of the percentage of people who are protected, 95%. The flu vaccine, you know, is 30, 40, 50%. But it is similar in that it may, these vaccines may only prevent severe disease in everyone and less so prevent infection.
Well, and it does raise the question of would people need to take the vaccine multiple times? Would it be like the flu shot where you have to get vaccinated on a yearly basis?
Yeah, you know, I have had questions. We've done some brainstorming around that. Will it be like tetanus, where every 10 years you need a booster? Will it be like the flu, where every year you need one? Or will it be, wouldn't it be great if it was like measles, where you get the measles vaccine, two doses, and you're immune for life? Mm. It's possible that it could be like the measles vaccine, but it seems unlikely. The other coronaviruses that are in the same subgroup, this beta coronavirus subgroup, you have immunity for a time, and then you can get infected with the same darn virus, you know, 2 years later.
Okay. Well, let's move on to another question about the vaccine that we got via voicemail.
Hello, this is Tom from Eugene. My question is this. If a person is vaccinated with a vaccine from one manufacturer, must the booster vaccine in 3 weeks come from the same manufacturer, or can it come from another supplier? I can foresee a medical marketplace with many pharmaceutical companies developing COVID-19 serums, and I wonder how they will interact with each other. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a very good question. And right now, what we know is the antigens used, and antigen is that fancy word in immunology, the study of immunity, that is the chemical your body sees, responds to, and makes an antibody against. That's the fancy word, antigen. So it's that chemical. And these vaccines are using slightly different chemicals. So they are not interchangeable. So if you get your first dose for the vaccine is Pfizer, your second dose has to be Pfizer. If your first dose is Moderna, your second dose has to be Moderna. You are not going to get the booster effect from the second dose if you didn't get the same dose as the first.
Okay, so stick with the same manufacturer.
Absolutely. And not only that, think about the logistics of this. Even though we are spending much more time at home than we normally are, people still are doing some mini traveling or have other events. If you are in line to get your first dose on January 1st, make sure that somewhere around January 22nd, which is 3 weeks later, you're available to get that second dose. Don't, you know, make your once-in-a-lifetime trip to Tahiti and miss that second dose.
Okay. Here's another question about vaccination.
This is Marcy. I'm calling from Yaha. It's on the coast. My question is, those folks who've had the COVID and recovered, are they still going to need to be inoculated? Thank you.
So the general response is yes. That's the easy response. What we do know from COVID is the response can be different from person to person. In general, people who've had severe COVID disease, which typically means they were hospitalized, disease severe enough to require hospitalization, they tend to develop higher antibody levels. And as far as we can tell, those antibody levels tend to stay around longer. So they will have more protection. But many, many people, roughly 80% of us who get this coronavirus, have mild or asymptomatic infections, and we most likely develop less antibody and it lasts less long. So we all should be thinking of getting this vaccine to be protected over the longer term.
You're listening to KLCC's Friday Show with Lane County Public Health Dr. Patrick Ludke. I'm Rachel McDonald. We got this question last week from Scott in Eugene and ran out of time, and I'm going to try to fit it in here. He says, my wife tested positive for COVID in early October and had light symptoms. I quarantined 2 weeks and then I was tested and my PCR results were negative. I was very exposed to her during this period. My doctor said it was likely I caught it, but I was asymptomatic and that my PCR test was likely outside the window of time. So I don't know if I had it or not. And he's asking, what is the value of getting an antibody test at this point?
Oh, my. My response will be as follows. I think what this person's medical provider said is likely what happened. No test is perfect. I think that many of us outside of the clinical world think that every test is perfect, right? If you get a pregnancy test and you, if it says you're pregnant, you're pregnant. And if it says you're not, you're not. I suspect there are some listeners who have realized that, boy, I sure feel like I'm pregnant. The test says it's negative, and ultimately a week later it was positive. But many of us think the tests are absolutely right. So the PCR test, depending upon the laboratory, can be as high as in the low 90s, accurate, but it can be as low as in the 70s. So it could have been that he either had already had the infection and cleared it, and by the time he got the PCR test, there wasn't enough virus in there to be positive, or it could be that the test just wasn't, it didn't collect enough of the virus in his nose, in his nasopharynx, and he was infected. So there can be several reasons it was a false negative. And in terms of the antibody test, the value of the antibody test, I think in him there might be value, but then if you knew you had some antibody now, we can't definitely tell you, given the antibody tests we have available, if it's protective antibody. And none of the tests on the market that we are offering currently do the test for neutralizing antibodies, showing that the antibody actually kills the virus. So I'm going to make one more little comment on that. Viruses and bacteria, even though they're nowhere near as complex as we as humans are, they still have several different chemicals that we can make antibodies to. So the virus has it has its genetic material, it has structural material, it has those little spikes on the surface, and there can be antibodies made against each of those, but they aren't all protective antibodies. So the antibody test that he would get would say, yeah, you probably came in contact with it, but you're not protected. And right now, we don't have a commercially available test to say you are protected. So I would suggest what he's thinking is, should I get the vaccine or not? If my antibodies are positive, I would say get in line to get the vaccine.
And let's just go back to that, because I think a lot of what you said earlier really points to this idea that the vaccine is effective when people are vaccinated, that it's really important that people get vaccinated, because if somebody has taken the vaccine and someone else hasn't, then that means that one of them could become ill. Hopefully that made sense.
Yeah, well, it's very true. I think that people who get these two-dose vaccines, they will develop 95% of them, 95% of them will develop protective antibodies, and they will have that immunity for some time. We're hoping it's a few years. It might only be 1 year. 1 year would be enough to get us through this pandemic, and we would be in a much better position from a societal standpoint if we got a lot of people vaccinated, even if it was only effective 1 year. But we do need enough people to get vaccinated to get that herd immunity to make a difference, to allow our society to kind of reopen. It's not going to be the same as it was in 2019, but at least we'll have more schools, more businesses, et cetera, open if we can get to that point.
What about the herd immunity that people talk about when you have become ill and then recovered from COVID-19?
Well, that's one of the ways to get it. I mean, there's two main ways to get immunity. You can either get what we call natural immunity, where you get the infection and you make your own antibody, or you can get it from some medical means, typically vaccine. Occasionally, we can also give people antibodies, but we just don't have COVID antibodies sitting around that we can give 330 million people. So the two main ways to get that herd immunity are either you get infected or you get the vaccine. And we need both of those to add up to 70-75% of our community to prevent this pandemic from continuing to ruin our lives.
Mm. Well, here's a question from Sue, who sent us an email. She says, I have a coworker who's planning to travel to Hawaii over the holiday. He doesn't feel there's any need to quarantine when they travel back to Oregon, because apparently there are no cases or low cases in Hawaii. So she's asking for some guidance.
Are we going to hear the question, or is that the question?
Well, that's the question. Basically, okay. it's not a voicemail. It's an email. So,
oh, got it.
So she wanted to know, basically, if her coworker is traveling to Hawaii but not planning to quarantine, is this a problem?
Yeah, so I think it's actually a good question. I think, you know, Hawaii was one of those states that early on said, look, we have little or no COVID. We don't want it to come here. So we're going to mandate if people are going to travel here, they have to prove that they are COVID negative and get a test. And a few other states have done that as well. And if you would think that that was a good way forward, and if it worked, then most of the people in Hawaii don't have COVID, so the risk is very low. And when somebody traveled back to Eugene from Hawaii, the chances of bringing COVID here is pretty low. But the chance is not zero. And again, 80% of us have asymptomatic or mildly symptomatic infection, and you could very well get exposed there, get COVID, and bring it back here, which if you are younger, if you don't have lung or heart disease, if you don't have immune system problems, won't do anything to you, but you could still spread it to others. And I personally feel that we have a community responsibility to other persons who are perhaps less fortunate than we are, and we all need to really be considering that. So I would suggest following the current Oregon Health Authority recommendation of 14 days upon returning from travel, monitor yourself. If you develop COVID-compatible symptoms, go seek care and find out, is it COVID?
Okay. And here is a voicemail question.
Hi, my name is Ingrid. I live in Eugene, and I have a question about aerosols and the possibility of encountering those aerosols when I walk past somebody on a trail. Many people put their mask on at the very last minute, just, you know, like 10 feet away, and they take them off. So if I'm walking past them, would I be walking into an aerosol with COVID particles suspended in the air? Thanks.
I think it's possible, but it's very unlikely. You know, the outdoor air is such a huge dilution source. And in public health, especially in environmental public health, I don't know if I've used this phrase before on the radio show, but we say that dilution is the solution to pollution. And that's what many factories used for years. They would build their chimney taller, higher in the air, so that by the time that smoke drifted down to where people lived, it was diluted out, and the toxin was at such a low level that it didn't cause any problems. We could talk at a different show about the long-term buildup of toxins, but for viruses, dilution is a solution to viral load, the amount of virus floating in the air. And when you're outside on a trail, breezes, a little bit of breezes blow the virus and dilute it markedly, and you are rarely going to be staying in one place for more than a half second or two or three. And then finally, this is not a virus where one or two viral particles will infect you. You probably need 1,000 or maybe even 1,500 of them. And walking through some person's exhalation trail for a half a second is very unlikely to have you breathe in 1,000, 2,000 viral particles. So I walk on trails. I do a lot of hiking myself. I wear a mask when I'm out there. I am not particularly worried when someone else doesn't, because I'm walking through that space for such a short period of time. The dose that I breathe in is not going to make me sick.
All right. Well, thanks so much. We're out of time. Thank you very much, Dr. Ludke. We will be taking the holiday weeks off. Thanks for being with us for our Friday show. I'm Rachel McDonald. Thanks to Angela Kellner and Mallory Begay for production assistance.